Welcome to The Mission Show, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I am your solo host today. Our great friend and my great friend and our longtime co-host, Alex, could not be on here today, taking care of something really important with his sick kids. And so it's my privilege to join you today as we go into some deep discussions on what's happening around the world. And I think this discussion today is something that you're definitely going to be happy that you tuned in for. We have a guest joining us who we've had on the show before, but actually many, many years ago. And with what's going on in the news right now, as we turn on the news and we see what's been happening in this great nation, a powerful nation, one of the biggest nations in the whole Middle East, but also like a lot of history there in the nation of Iran. Iran, as you might remember, is ancient Persia, the home of Daniel and Esther, Mordecai, of Ezra and Nehemiah, and then, of course, these great kings who had a huge impact on Israel and, of course, then redemptive history with Cyrus, Xerxes, and others. And so we're very excited to welcome back to our show a missionary with ABW, someone who we're going to protect his identity for reasons that will become very obvious to you. We're just going to say his name is Sam. He works with Persian and Iranian people in the West, but also around the world. And so, Sam, we're so glad to have you back on the show. I hope you're doing well.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
We've all been watching the news, right? And especially those who are tuned in to what's happening in missions. What's going on in Iran right now is big. I was just watching a news show that has nothing to do with Christian missions. And they're like, well, we just put our second aircraft carrier into the Persian, you know, into the Middle East. The first one was a warning. The second one seems a lot more imminent of some kind of action. And so obviously everyone's tuned into what's happening in Iran. Can you just give us a little bit of background for those maybe who are a little unfamiliar with how did we get to this point? How did we go from Daniel all the way to now we have Ayatollahs and terrorism and all the things that we think of Iran today?
As you mentioned, Scott, Iran, which was called Persia for centuries, and then they changed the name of the country to Iran, which means the land of the Aryans, under the influence of the Nazis in the 1930s. So Iran or Persia, whichever name you prefer, this is an ancient civilization. We have more than 2,000 years of history, and it's such a biblical place. I always say to my friends, please pray for a free Iran. I'd like to take you on a tour of the country and show you all these biblical places, because Iran is such a biblical place, the land of the Magi, who were among the first people who acknowledged Christ as King of Kings, the land of Cyrus the Great, who freed the Jews and allowed them to go back to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple, the land of the Medes, Persians, and Elamites, who were present at Pentecost, actually. So you also mentioned Esther and Mordecai. There's a large Jewish community in Iran. Even now, as we speak, there are so many synagogues and there's a Jewish community there. And Iran's history has been closely linked with Jewish history. And these are two nations that God has mentioned specifically in the Bible. And we've lived in peace with Jewish people for centuries. Unfortunately, in 1979, a revolution happened, which was not Islamic at first. It was a revolution that was led by communists, mostly the Mujahideen, communists, nationalists, Islamists as well. But eventually the Islamists hijacked the revolution under the leadership of their charismatic leader, Ayatollah Khomeini. This revolution was supposed to bring freedom to the country. Unfortunately, it replaced a secular dictatorship, actually became a theological dictatorship. For 47 years, Iranians have been trying to overthrow this regime because this is not what they expected. They wanted freedom, they wanted liberty, and they wanted to be normal people just like everybody else in the world. So there have been uprisings, there have been movements, there have been attempts to overthrow this regime. But this regime is just brutal. You heard that recently, like January it was January 7 and 8, just in 2 days, the Islamists, the Muslim militia in Iran massacred 30,000 innocent Iranians in cold blood. They even went to the hospitals and shot the wounded and the injured. This is how cruel they can be. And this is something that, unfortunately, people in the West don't understand. Even the politicians, sometimes we talk to, you know, people who are interested in politics, and we see that they don't quite understand Shiite Islam. That's the branch of Islam that's dominant in Iran, although most Iranians nowadays don't associate themselves with Islam. They're most of them are nominal Muslims. But the rulers, the Ayatollahs, they are Shiite clerics. And Shiite Islam has an apocalyptic view of the world. They have a chaos theory. So when they say death to America, they mean it. It's not just a motto. When they say death to Israel, they mean that. And they've called for Israel to be wiped out several times. There are actually two branches of Shiite Islam. There is one that says in order to hasten the coming of Mahdi, which is their Messiah, and they think he's coming back to save the world, we need to create chaos in the world. We need to kill. We need to destroy Israel and the United States, because those are the signs for the coming of Mahdi, when the world is in total chaos and destruction. But there's also another sect in Shiite Islam that says we need to wait. We need to wait. We don't need to do anything. We need to wait and wait for Mahdi to come and save the world. But the Ayatollahs who rule Iran, they belong to the first sect that says we need to hasten the coming of Mahdi. And how do we do that? We do that through chaos and destruction and killing of others. So this is something I think which is very important. People need to understand that this is the kind of mindset that they have.
So when I meet Persian people here in the States, they tend to be very modern, very pretty progressive, and sometimes in their thinking, not like I would think of as a traditional Muslim. And then we look at pictures of before the rise of the Ayatollah and this Islamic revolution, and we see an Iran that was very modern, very beautiful, seemed to be quite advanced as a civilization, as we know, like, you know, the Persian nation has been, you know, one of the major nations in the whole world for generations, for millennia. But now our impression of Iran is that it's very oppressive, very retrogressive in the way that it goes about things. And then we see these images of, you just said, 30,000 people being slaughtered. What is life like today, as far as you know, for the average Iranian on the in the ground there in Iran?
People are miserable. The economy is in shatters. Iran is a rich country. It's extremely rich. We have oil, we have gas, we have all kinds of precious minerals. But where does the money go? They sell the oil, they sell the gas, they sell the minerals, and the money goes into their ballistic missile programs. The money goes into their nuclear programs. And they also pay their proxies in the region, in the Middle East, like Hamas, Hezbollah. There are so many proxies that they have in the region, some in Iraq, some in Yemen, whereas our people are poor. They're poor because all the money goes to the coffers of the Ayatollahs, and the Ayatollahs are spending this money on their plans to destroy the world, basically. And sometimes you see they send their children and their relatives abroad. Their children, this is just like an oligarchy, you know, just like Russia. The children of the Ayatollahs and the regime officials live in luxury. They live in Paris, in New York, in, you know, Los Angeles and other cities in Europe and North America, and even in Canada. People now, Iranian people, are looking at their posts on social media, because through social media they can now see how the children of the Ayatollah are living abroad. And they're saying, this is hypocrisy, right? You're saying death to America. how come your children live in the United States? So the situation is really bad, especially after the massacre, the recent massacre. People were hoping that Trump would act, because he said to the Iranian people, go to the streets, help is on the way. And people listened to him, and nothing happened. So they're really, really disappointed now, because they were hoping that either Israel or the United States would come to their rescue, because this time we had millions of people went to the streets and said they said they didn't want this Islamic regime. And you know, when you say that, when you live under a dictatorship, an Islamic dictatorship like this, and you say, I don't want Islam, you become an infidel. And the punishment for that is death. And considering the fact that this sect of Shiite Islam that's practiced in Iran is a death cult in itself, so they start shooting people without remorse. So you don't want Islam, you need to die. But the situation is really bad. There's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of mismanagement, there's lack of there's shortage of water, people don't have food, they don't have electricity, despite the fact that this is a really rich country.
So it's also a large country, if I'm understanding it right. It's about the size of Texas.
That's right.
So that's a large land mass.
Yes.
And what we usually see on the news is taking place in Tehran, the capital. What about the rest of the country? Is it similar throughout the rest of the country, or is most of this unrest taking place just in the capital?
No, the unrest took place everywhere. This recent uprising, hundreds of cities and towns, people just went to the streets and said, we are fed up with this regime. We just want to have a normal life, just like everybody else in this world. You know, we want to be able to put bread on the table. They're not asking for, you know, extraordinary things, just things that we here in the West take for granted. We want to live in peace and prosperity with the world. We don't want to be harassed when we walk in the streets by Muslim militia. We want to choose how to dress, how to think, speak, and believe. We want to study, work, and build a future based on merit, not on Islamic ideology. We want to raise our children without indoctrination or fear. They were butchered for demanding those things, you know, because, again, we are talking about radical Islam here. When you say you don't want Islam, you become, this is in Arabic, they call it muharabe. Muharabe means you become an infidel. And they quote the Quran. When they kill these people, they quote the Quran, because on two occasions, the Quran says, kill until fitna is over. And fitna means infidels, until you get rid of the infidels.
What would you say, though, about, like, we've been talking about just the average person on the street, which is a nominal Muslim. What about the church? So I feel like last time we came on, you were telling us that there's been a gospel surge going on in the nation of Iran. Is that still the case? And what is life like on the ground for the average Christian right now?
Most Christian organizations say that Iran has the fastest growing number of evangelical churches in the world. Obviously, we don't have an actual church to go to. Our people go to underground churches, and underground churches are growing. House church movement has been growing in Iran for many years. But the problem is that when you have a small group, you're usually okay. When your group becomes bigger and bigger, you have infiltration from secret police and the Islamic militia. They infiltrate, they usually kill the pastors and the church leaders, and they've been trying to suppress this for years and years. But the problem with recent uprising is that we saw pictures, we heard from our partners inside Iran, that they have been killing a lot of the Christians. Because at a time like this, when you're a Christian or even when you're a Jew, you become a target, because they consider Christians and Jews as spies. They said, you're spying for the United States, you're spying for the West, you're spying for Israel. So unfortunately, hundreds of Christians were killed during this recent massacre that happened. Christianity is still growing in Iran, and underground house church movement is growing. But this is something that the regime wants to get rid of. For many years, they've been trying to, you know, infiltrate these groups. They've been trying to do different things to just wipe out Christianity from Iran. So they're afraid of the Bible as much as they're afraid of the bombs.
Just for our listeners, are these things that you're hearing through Iranian pastors and Christians that you know? Or are you hearing it kind of secondhand through just connections that you have in the region?
No, we have connections with pastors and house church leaders in Iran. We connect with them through social media, mostly because the internet is highly censored in Iran. The Iranian regime has been trying to create its own national internet, so people cannot have access to the outside world. So internet is highly censored. We can't send emails. Emails are monitored, even phone conversations. But through social media, like apps such as WhatsApp or Telegram, which is very popular in Iran, we try to connect with them. So this is firsthand information that we get from pastors and house church leaders. That suppression, there's a lot of suppression, and there has been a lot of killing recently. And all they say to us here is just please keep praying for us.
Here at ABWE, we believe that the Great Commission is given not to nonprofit agencies, not to governments, not just to individuals, but to the local church. The local church is God's plan A for world missions. But let me ask you a question. When was the last time your church had not just a missions-themed service, but an intentional time of seeking the Lord, asking, Lord, who is it from among our midst that you would have us to send out? Well, that's why our team here has built a wonderful collection of resources called Send Sunday. You can have not just another Mission Sunday, but an intentional time of seeking the Lord, waiting upon Him, and seeking His direction for who He might send out from your church. There's prayer guides, there's bulletin inserts, there's sermon study guides, and more, all at abwe.org/sendsunday. Join the hundreds of other churches asking the Lord, who would you send out from our midst? Join us for Send Sunday.
So some people, you know, and Alex and I have actually talked about persecution quite a bit, because there is sometimes, I think, that the feeling in the West that while persecution is good for the church because, you know, it purifies it, you know, what's left is the true church. But there's also lots of examples in history where persecution wiped out, at least for that period of time, a church in an area. Like a Japan would be an example of that, where Christianity at one time was flourishing or starting to grow, and then, you know, the brutal regimes of the shoguns wiped it out to the point that it really has not yet recovered in the nation of Japan. When a pastor is taken into prison or killed in these kind of, you know, violent reprisals, what ends up happening to the church? How does a church that's under such intense persecution already survive that? And do the lost see that and are drawn to it? Or do the lost see that persecution and say, hey, you know, we need to stay clear of these Christians lest the same thing happens to us?
Well, obviously persecution is a bad thing. But as far as Iran is concerned, persecution has helped the house church movement there to grow. But what happens after pastors are being caught? Like, there was one Iranian pastor. He had a prayer meeting every week, and many people came to his prayer meetings in the basement of his home. Two members of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard members joined the prayer meeting. After everyone was gone, after the prayer meeting was ended, everybody was gone, they literally butchered him to death and put his dismembered body in the fridge. So when his family came back home, they found his body in the fridge. So what happened to his family? They fled Iran. Usually this is what happens when pastors are killed, house church leaders are put in prison. They threaten their family members, their friends, and some of them I know, many of them, they flee to Turkey or to Armenia. Some have managed to come here to North America, either Canada or the United States, and they start their own ministries. Like a couple of pastors who were martyred in Iran, their children had to flee the country, and they're now in the United States. They have their own Persian ministries. They can't stop the house church movement. So this is something that's really bothering the Islamic regime right now.
I would imagine that, and I don't know that much about the historic church in Iran, but I imagine it's very similar to Iraq, where there's a Chaldean church that has very ancient roots in the Church of the East. Is the same thing true in ancient Iran? And how do these evangelical house church leaders relate to the historical ancient church that's still, I'm assuming, still there?
That's right. We have first century churches in Iran. Apostle Jude, in Iran, they call him Saint Thaddeus. Apostle Jude was one of the apostles who went to that region, to Persia, and spread the gospel there. And he was martyred in northwestern Iran. And on the site of his martyrdom, they built a church, which is still there. It's a heritage, it's a World Heritage Site, and we have two ancient churches in Iran. It's the Armenian church, which is an ancient church. We also have an Assyrian church. Assyrian church is also an ancient church. It's a first century church. They speak Aramaic in their services. They speak the language of Jesus. That's how ancient that church is. We have other types of Orthodox or ancient churches in Iran, but they're not allowed to evangelize. You know, they can have their own churches. They can go to their own services. But first of all, they usually speak a different language than Persian. Armenians speak Aramaic for their church services, and Armenians speak Armenian, and Assyrians speak Aramaic, languages that most Iranians don't understand. But even if we do understand their language, we are not allowed to go to those churches. Iran has a system of, like, they have every single Iranian has a national ID card, and on their ID card it says whether you were born into a Muslim family or a Christian family or whatever. So if you were born into a Muslim family, your ID card, national ID card, says Muslim, and they usually put someone from the militia groups or Revolutionary Guard members at the door of these ancient churches. When people want to enter the churches, they look at their ID cards. If it says Muslim, they wouldn't let them in. So they are not allowed to evangelize. They're not allowed to even share the gospel with ordinary Iranians. But some of their pastors and leaders did that. And those were the ones who were martyred. Some pastors of Assyrian and Armenian churches, these two ancient churches, they became evangelical. They shared the gospel with Muslims and Iranians, and they were killed. They were brutally killed by the regime. So underground churches, these ancient churches don't want to associate with them because they would put their lives on the line if they do.
I live in an area where there are Iranians that live in this area. Of course, it's a major metropolitan area in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I occasionally meet Iranians, some of whom even have green cards that have been in the country for a while. Many of them feel like they're in kind of a no man's land with some of the recent immigration policies, because I know that there's been kind of a stop on granting any kind of citizenship to Iranian nationals in America, even if they're already here. I felt myself sometimes a little bit unsure of how to talk to them. I mean, certainly I know how to talk to them about the gospel and encouraging them to trust in Christ. But when it comes to talking about what's going on in Iran, How can we, like, for instance, myself as a Westerner, an American, encourage, talk about what's happening in Iran, let my neighbors know that I'm praying for them? What do you suggest are some good tips for even just engaging on those initial levels with our Iranian neighbors here in the States or in Canada or wherever in the West people might be listening to this?
Unlike the West, in Iran, people love to talk about politics. You know, how we say these are the topics you should never, you know, engage
with
when you talk to people, politics, religion. But Iranians love to talk about religion. They love to talk about politics. And they're very politically minded. And they have a lot of knowledge about what's going on in the world. So, but what they need right now after the massacre and the slaughter that happened is prayer. So whenever you see an Iranian, talk to them about what happened in Iran, try to empathize with them and pray together. We prayed together after what happened. We gathered with Iranians and prayed together. We fasted together. We petitioned God to intervene. We wrote letters to presidents and prime ministers. We attended Freedom for Iran rallies. Like a few days ago, there was a rally in Los Angeles. 350,000 Iranians showed up and called for the demise of this regime. In Toronto, again, the same amount of people, 350,000. In Munich, more than 200,000 people showed up and called for this regime to, they called on the world to help them because they know with empty hands they can't do anything, right? These are ordinary people. They don't have guns. They don't have any means of protection. And they go to the streets and call for the government to go. And then they have guns and, you know, they shoot at the people. So they need the help of the international community to get rid of this regime. So they're putting a lot, they're now thinking that maybe one day the U.S. or Israel will come to their rescue. Prayer works very powerfully. Pray for them. They're always open to prayer. Talk to them about what's happening in Iran. They would love to talk to you about what's happening there.
Well, we're out of time for this time, but thank you so much, Sam, for joining us. And if you have questions that you would like to direct towards Sam, we're not going to give you his direct contact for security reasons, but you could write to me, scott@missionspodcast.com, or alex@missionspodcast.com, and we'll do a little bit of vetting and find out if it's appropriate to connect you or not. But thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for praying for the nation of Iran. And until next time, go and make disciples of the nations.